Dude, my knee is absolutely cooked. I feel like I'm 70.
You tapping out already?
Yeah, man. My knee's telling me to retire.
Bro, you're never going to feel young again if you're still rocking those crusty knee sleeves from 2005.
What?
IncrediWear, dude. The IncrediWear knee sleeve.
What the hell is that?
This is what the pros use. Four of the last five NBA MVPs wore IncrediWear. It's not squeeze your knee until it's numb compression. It actually increases blood flow and speeds recovery. Less pain, better healing. And the best part? Wear it all day and walk like you're not 80.
Wait, so it's not just cutting off my circulation and hoping for the best?
Nope, it actually works. So you coming back in? Or are you going to sit there and feel old?
All right, let's go.
Stop letting your knees bench you. Go to freesocks.com, grab the IncrediWear knee sleeve, and get a free pair of IncrediWear socks. FreeSox.com, and get a free pair of socks with your knee sleeve purchase. Get back in the game.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to to Take the Black, the one and only fantasy sci-fi podcast show where we talk about fantasy and sci-fi, and I stumble over my intro. I am Daniel Roman here for winterscoming.net. I'm the editor, and I am so excited to be here with Mark Nettles of House of Nettles, also writer at Winter is Coming. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been a great day. We got great intros and we got great things to talk about.
Yes, we do. Man, so we're excited to be back this week. We were out last week because I was sick and apparently my brain is still just mush. You guys, if you're watching this show, you know what it's about. We talk about fantasy sci-fi, Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And there's been some cool stuff going on in the world of Westeros, and we need to discuss it. Yeah. So Mark, before we dive into it, how you doing? How's life?
Life is good. Work is work, but I'm just so happy that I get to talk about all that good fantasy stuff. So it all comes full circle. Like I go to work,
yes,
I toil away, and then I'm like, you know, I get to talk with you guys and everyone listening right now. So it's good.
Hell yeah.
I haven't been sick like you, so that's also a plus.
Yes. Yeah, totally. You're in warmer climes. Up here, it's cold. It's starting to feel like spring. And maybe that means that the illnesses can go away.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But anyway, we are going to start with A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. We have A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms stuff to talk about. We have Game of Thrones movie stuff to talk about. It's been a busy week in the Seven Kingdoms. Starting off, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. Season one ended a couple weeks ago. We have a lot of stuff to talk about for season two, including some new casting announcements that dropped in the past week. But before we dive into everything we know about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms season two, why don't we revisit season one a little bit? We've had some time to sit on it, to think about this season and whether we liked it, whether there was just recency bias and it was really garbage. All that kind of stuff. So, Mark, now that you've digested it completely, how do you feel about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms season one? Is it as good as you felt initially?
It was better than I felt initially. I thought the season was terrific. And I think I like to describe it as, say I was a billionaire and I had the best house in the world, the best living room in the world. But my wife said we need to paint an accent wall.
Okay.
And I'm like, we had the best designers from Italy, the Horn of Africa, New York City, LA, Chicago, all come here and design this. Why do we need to paint this? And she's just adamant on painting it. And we do. And it looks better. And that's why I think when I think of season one of the Knight of the Seven Kingdoms in comparison to just itself and comparison to the novella was already great. Watching it play out in live action only made me like and enjoy everything better.
That was an amazing analogy for this. Like all the props for that. I don't know if you've been building that up or if that just came on the fly. I don't even want to know, but it was fantastic.
A mystery.
Yes. You know, I think I agree with you. I've seen it a few times through now this season. And like, look, I love The Hedge Knight. I love the Tales of Duncan Egg books. Like, they're fantastic stories. But I gotta say, there's something about the production of this thing that really elevated a lot of elements of it from what was on the page, which was already great. But it's, you know, seeing people like Oscar Morgan embody Valar Targaryen. And like, you know, all these characters who like, they didn't have a lot of screen time. Like, you know, Valar had literally three lines or whatever in the whole show. And like, I keep catching myself thinking about them because there's just something about the way these actors elevated the characters. Plummer, like, I didn't ever care about Plummer in the book, and he was a lot of fun, you know, and that's pretty much consistent across the board. So yeah, man, are we just shilling for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms? Because I agree with you. I do think it is even better than I felt when it first finished.
Especially what you're talking about, like, even for certain characters like Valar, we got as much as we got from him from the books.
True.
But seeing the emotion, and especially it being just portrayed good, I want to say well written, but they just took the line from the book, so that doesn't mean it wasn't well written. You still have to know when to use them, and they like, hey, we keep these lines.
Totally.
They're great for that character. Even other characters that they expanded upon, like the Laughing Storm, Lord Lionel Baratheon.
Totally.
In the novella, we hear about, hey, he's a boisterous guy. We insinuate he likes to party. We know he's really good at jousting. We see him win a lot of jousts. Well, we read he reads a lot of wins a lot of jousts in the book. But seeing him on the screen, seeing how he thinks of House Targaryen, how he thinks, okay, I'm not the biggest fan of my dragon cousins. It's just something completely different from the novella, but still in line with everything what we know about this world, we know about the Blackfyre Rebellion. Everything still lines up. There's nothing that they added, and I say that wouldn't fit if I thought about that topic in the novella.
Yeah, I think this show, there's something to be said for knowing when to pull straight from the book, knowing when to expand. Like, there's a certain restraint that's needed to do that, to not just go off the rails. And I think this show really nailed that balance, you know, where it absolutely pulled a lot of stuff straight from the book, but like, it added a lot too. Like, it really did. Like the Lionel stuff you're talking about, like, he's a fan favorite. Like, people love Lionel Baratheon. They love Daniel Ings in that role, but like, you really don't see a ton of him. Like you said, you read him winning jousts and stuff, but that's different than like the FaceTime we got with him in the show, where like, Dunks in his tent and they're broing out and they're buddies and then they're playing tug of war and then Lionel eventually shows up. Like, you get the Lionel showing up, you get some stuff. He's still memorable in the novella, but I think they were really smart about what they added and where they added things and what they chose to expand, like, to make it fit the episodic structure. So like, I know a lot of people didn't love the flashback during the Trial of Seven, and like, my first time watching, I was like, what the hell is going on here? This is crazy. But, you know, the trial was the logical thing for episode 5, right? It's just the trial. It ends with Baelor's death. That's what they had to do for that episode. And I think expanding something there is really smart, because like, they can't do a half an hour of, they already did like 12 or 13 minutes and it was a lot.
It's only so long you could be fighting.
It's true. Everybody gets tired and everything. Honestly, I do think the novella was fantastic. It is an improvement on it, which, like, what am I saying? Like, is that sacrilegious?
I'm sorry, George.
Well, you know, it says something that he really loves. You know, he has been very vocal about his support for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. He was a little more involved. The showrunner, Ira Parker, has been very clear that he wants to keep George R. R. Martin involved and like, bouncing stuff off him. And like, I don't know, like, we don't need to get into Shading House of the Dragon, but I do think not this time, not in this episode, but I do think there's something to be said for, you know, listening to what the original story was, listening to the author and stuff like that, and still having the freedom to add tons of stuff, and it's not like he's mad about it, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's the crux of it all. Knowing when what projects you can add more material to. In terms of Game of Thrones, hey, I enjoyed most of Game of Thrones. It was awesome. But I understand why you needed to shrink it down from the books. You couldn't have every character ever mentioned appear on the screen. The book's too big. I got to tell you where the books at. They're right here. They're too big for all that. Yeah. in terms of Another the Seven Kingdoms and House of the Dragon, you really have some leeway to connect the dots between certain points.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, depending on what story you want to tell, you can really expand upon certain characters, certain plots, certain things that were only mentioned in the text. So in terms of how Night of the Seven Kingdoms did it, like, I feel like that was phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, a Night of the Seven Kingdoms is in the privileged position where it's not starting out on its own. You know, Game of Thrones is a proven brand. It had a good budget. Like, they could do the big battle, you know, during Game of Thrones season one. Yeah. The showrunners David Benioff and Dan Weiss kind of famously said that they lied to HBO and said they could cut out the battles. And sorry, the stupid cold. I'm trying to talk about Westeros here, cold. They lied to HBO and said, we can cut out battles, hoping that by the time they got to the Battle of the Blackwater, the show would be big enough that they could convince HBO. And like, Blackwater wasn't in their budget originally. They went back to HBO and said, we really need to do this one. Can we please have more budget for it? A Night of the Seven Kingdoms obviously didn't need to do that. So like, there are a lot of creative choices Thrones made because of that. Like, you know, all those two-hander scenes, like the one with Robert Baratheon and Cersei, where they're talking about how their marriage failed. Like, that was a direct result of, we just need more stuff to fill episodes. And like, that's TV. But that's really different than like drastically changing the story, you know? And I think A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, everything it added strengthened the story. Like, there's not a single thing I can think of where it's like, man, that really kind of took away from the heart of this tale or the core of this tale. Like, nah, they crushed it. They totally understood the assignment. And it makes me even more excited for what's ahead, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I think, like you said, I think we're both just fanboying over here. Like, oh, we love A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I know I asked you this after our episode 6, but like, was there anything you didn't like?
That's a good question. I think I said the same thing, and I'll say now, there's nothing I didn't like. I know a lot of people complained about the flashbacks per se, but they were some of my favorite parts. I enjoyed learning a little bit more about Dunk, which, you, instead of having to go through a long monologue and us unable to listen to his inner monologue, like, just, hey, let's put it on the screen. Let's show a little bit of his past so we can get a little bit more understanding. And we have the time. Like, we don't got a whole 6 episodes of material. What are we going to put here? We'll put these flashbacks into place.
Yeah, totally. And it differentiates it, you know, tonally from Thrones and House of the Dragon, because they did not use flashbacks aside from like one or two very specific instances, but like never for comedic effect, little flashbacks like this show does. And then by the time you get to the big one, you know, they kind of lull you into it with these little funny flashbacks that just add to the tone. They let you see Dunk's thought process. And then they drop the big one on you when he's unconscious during the Trial of Seven. And like, something I didn't know that I've seen a lot of people talking about, like on Reddit and in other online spaces, is that when George R. R. Martin wrote The Hedge Knight, so it was only 1998, I believe. So he was still writing A Clash of Kings. He hadn't finished A Clash of Kings when this book came out. And he didn't have the plan in place for the Blackfyre Rebellion. So that's why like The Hedge Knight doesn't mention the Blackfyre Rebellion, like not once. Because originally, apparently, the plan that is, this is generally understood fandom stuff, he has not confirmed this, I don't think, was that Arryon Brightflame, the Bright Flames, were going to be like the rebellion Targaryens who tried to take over the Iron Throne. But then he came up with the Blackfyre Rebellion and introduced it in the Sworn Sword and all that stuff. So the show had the benefit of working in a lot of that stuff, especially during that flashback, which, like, I know it's Dunk's backstory, but I really enjoyed too, like, seeing the state of the Seven Kingdoms, you know, during that time period right after the Blackfyre Rebellion ended. Made me excited to see what things they might put in the next season.
Yeah. Now I feel like it could be more, even more mentions of House Blackfyre, the best house ever. I wish I could pull out my big House Blackfyre sign. I keep saying I'm going next time I have it out. I feel like it's great to see how they can expand that story, how we can get a little bit more mentions of House Blackfyre, because like you said, we don't hear in the novella, we don't hear anything about them in the first one. They're going to have a lot of leeway to incorporate that into the story. And that's going to be interesting. Hopefully we get a flashback. I would love to see that final battle. What's it called? I'm about to say Battle of the Redgrass Field, but that's not it.
That is it. Yeah.
Oh, that is it. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I want to see that too. And you know, Ira Parker has hinted we could get Blackfyre Rebellion flashbacks. So like, let us see the Redgrass Field. I want to see Daemon Targaryen.
Yeah.
Daemon Blackfyre. Sorry.
Well,
sorry, Matt Smith.
Dude, my knee is absolutely cooked. I feel like I'm 70.
You tapping out already?
Yeah, man. My knee's telling me to retire.
Bro, you're never going to feel young again if you're still rocking those crusty knee sleeves from 2005.
What?
IncrediWear, dude. The IncrediWear knee sleeve.
What the hell is that?
This is what the pros use. Four of the last five NBA MVPs wore IncrediWear. It's not squeeze your knee until it's numb compression. It actually increases blood flow and speeds recovery. Less pain, better healing. And the best part? Wear it all day and walk like you're not 80.
Wait, so it's not just cutting off my circulation and hoping for the best?
Nope, it actually works. So you coming back in? Or are you going to sit there and feel old?
All right, let's go.
Stop letting your knees bench you. Go to freesocks.com, grab the IncrediWear knee sleeve, and get a free pair of IncrediWear socks. FreeSox.com, and get a free pair of socks with your knee sleeve purchase. Get back in the game.
Yeah, I would love to see him. You know what? Hey, we got Sir Arlen. I want to see what Sir Arlen was doing during this battle.
Yeah, truth. Bring back Danny Webb. You know, there was one thing I didn't like. If I have to nitpick thing about this series, my one qualm was the amount of times Dunk got stabbed during the trial was a little ridiculous. It stretched the credibility of my belief just to the point where I was like, this is almost goofy, the amount of times he's getting stabbed.
What? I mean, first of all, he had the best chainmail.
That's true.
In the tourney.
That's true.
And then, I mean, we know he took the stab with the lance. Did he take a stab with a knife? He took a lot of slashes.
Oh my god! He got slashed a bunch. He got stabbed at least once.
All right, hey, chainmail's made for slashes. So I mean,
that's true.
He was eating those up. He was
his hand got stabbed. Arian threw a sword and stabbed him in the leg.
He did do that. He did.
You know, it on another show, I wouldn't think anything of it. It's just that, you know, Westeros's thing was always realism with its and I know the show got away from this originally, but like when George R. R. Martin talks about like writing the original books, it was like he wanted to move away from this idea of like someone surrounded by 10 people and they chop them all up. Like, no, in this world you see three people with knives and you're screwed. You know, so that was, if I have to nitpick one thing, that's my one thing, but it was a fantastic episode, a season of television. So
I believe in the strength of Sir Duncan the Tall. I don't know about you.
Fair.
But I believe in it. We got a whole flashback dedicated to us believing in it. But okay. That's all right. True. I'll let you have it.
Got stabbed in the flashback, and that was setting up. He is just a guy who can get stabbed and keep going.
Who needs all their organs? Just poke them a little bit. You'll be all right.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, so A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, Season one, obviously, we're still gushing. It's been weeks. We're still gushing. We're still writing about it very regularly at winteriscoming.net. If you are like us and you can't stop thinking about this season. But I did want to talk about season two. You ready to get into some season two stuff?
Yeah, we're a year in advance, but we're ready.
We are. And, you know, we kind of have a lot to talk about with this. Season two of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, adapting The Sworn Sword, which is the second Duncan Egg novella, it will release in 2027. So we don't know when yet, but it is currently filming. HBO said they're making this show an annual thing. So friggin' hurrah, we're back to an annual release. I've missed those.
I know they say like, all right, it's only six episodes. Okay, yeah. We can let it come out every year. Like, we'll allow them to have this yearly. Like, thank you, HBO.
Totally. And thank you, you know, Ira Parker and the team on the show for not being like, how can we make this so massive that it takes extra? Like, no, they're doing the story they need to do. They're not really expanding stuff to the point where it's buckling under its own weight. And that's very exciting. So the big thing, the big news for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms season two that we have to talk about is that there were casting announcements. They're already filming, so obviously they cast people, but now we know who they cast. So these just dropped. So we have, and we're going to talk a little bit of spoilers here for the Sworn Sword. Mark, we can however much or little you want to talk about it. We can probably dance around stuff a little bit if we want to.
Yeah, we don't gotta give the big plot points for what's happening, but we know they cast the characters, so people know who they're playing and what characters' names are gonna be in the show.
Yeah, totally. So first we have Lucy Boynton, who plays Lady Rohan Weber, aka the Red Widow. And she is the lady of a castle called Coldmoat. Sworn Sword sees Duncan Egg kind of caught in the middle of a land dispute between two holdfasts who each are claiming the same river. It's in the middle of a drought. It is not in Dorne. I've seen a lot of sites being like, season two set in Dorne because of an offhand thing Ira Parker said. It's not set in Dorne. It's in the Southern Reach. Duncan Egg travel through Dorne before the season because it's a year and a half after the end of the Hedge Knight. But yeah, Rohan Weber, what do you think of this casting? Any thoughts?
She looks great for the role. Yeah. I remember seeing her in Bohemian Rhapsody for her role there. So I thought she did well there. I can't wait to see how her portrayal is going to go. I know Lady Rohan Weber is supposed to be short. I don't know how short she is.
Yeah, but I don't know either.
They're gonna dye her hair red, put some extensions in, a long ponytail. She'll be ready to go.
Yeah, totally. I have seen pictures of her with red hair, and she looks fantastic. I saw a picture; it was a side by side of her with red hair and dark lipstick next to Lady Rohan Weber, who her big thing is she has like a long red braid, and the graphic novel she has dark lipstick, so it's like, okay, she's a dead ringer for this part. She's the one of the castings I am the least familiar with in terms of having seen them and stuff, but I know our writer who just wrote about Rohan Weber for the site, Richie, talked about her being in, I think, Sing Sing, and that was really, really good, and she kind of stole the show in it. So I high expectations. I'm sure she's going to be fantastic. She is 5'5" for the record, so that is, I believe, a full foot shorter than Peter Claffey.
Okay, so, it'll look ridiculous. We're all in.
perfect. The next casting we got to talk about is Babu Sisa, who plays Sir Benis of the Brown Shield. Benis is another Hedge Knight who, one of the rare people who knew Dunk before he left Sir Arlen's side. Benis remembers Dunk from when he was Arlen's squire. He knew Arlen, and he's got a much more cynical worldview than Dunk, we can say.
Yeah, he's seen the world from the best and mostly the worst sides of it. So it's gonna be great seeing Babu Sisa portray this role. I remember he was in Alien Earth, played the character Maro. Fantastic job.
So good. Yeah.
Fantastic. I can't wait for that to come back to see him play more of that character and see how he portrays this Sir Benis of the Brown Shield. I really hope the internet's nice sometimes.
Same.
The internet's not nice, and he is a black man, a black actor portraying this role, but it is a fantasy setting, so I think he's going to do a terrific job in it, but I know there are going to be all of a sudden a lot of, and I said it on my channel, Sir Ben is truthers, people are like, oh, he can't play this role, that's ridiculous.
It's insane. Yeah, I've already seen a little bit of that too, so it's just tiring at a certain point. I mean, this actor is so good. I have just no doubt he is going to crush this part. And I have a feeling that this is going to be one of those instances where he makes this character more memorable than he was in the book. Cause nobody likes Benis in the book. Like when people think of the Sworn Shield, no one's ever like, yeah, Benis was so good. But this dude playing Benis is going to be fantastic. I'm calling it now. He is going to elevate this part. It's going to be so good.
Yeah, I think they're really going to play with, like you were talking about earlier, that worldview that Bendis has, and how maybe he's a little more in the book. You know, it's pretty black and white, all the novellas, but
In
from what we saw from Night of the Seven Kingdoms, being able to see something from both perspectives, I think that's going to play a really big part with his character.
Totally. He's one I could see them adding some stuff for to really bring out his character a little more. I'm a little curious if they're going to keep him smelly. So, because that is, you know, like that's such a goofy thing. That so in the book, like one of his things is he stinks because he doesn't bathe very much. And like, I the show is so tongue in cheek that I wouldn't put it past them to keep that in somehow. But also, I'm curious. You know, I know this dude in Alien Earth. It was a very serious role. He gave a very serious performance. So I'm wondering if they're going to keep that one element of Bendis, or if they might. I think they could afford to leave that if they needed to.
I'm not going to be upset if they got rid of the smelly part.
And yeah, same.
Keep the red teeth because he chews on the sour leaf. So I think that's important.
I agree.
Maybe it could be a joke. Maybe he was smelly one time and that stuck with him his whole life.
That's the thing Dunk remembers about him from when he was a kid and he knew Bendis was he was smelly then. But yeah, so really excited to see him in season two. And then our last casting is Peter Mullen, who plays Sir Eustace Osgray. And man, this casting is so perfect for Eustace Osgray. So Peter Mullen, he's been in a ton of stuff. The fantasy things I remember seeing him in most recently. So he's Durin the Third in The Rings of Power, who's just like King Durin. But he's under so much makeup and prosthetics that he's like almost unrecognizable. The other one was The Witcher season 4. They recast Vesemir and he plays Vesemir in season 4. And he was really good. Vesemir himself was underutilized. I didn't like what they did with Vesemir in that season, but his performance was really great. So are you familiar with this guy? Have you seen him in stuff?
I am not. I know he was in the... In the Rings of Power, because I looked at it, I was like, oh, that was him, because I saw a little bit of that show. But I can't, like, hey, I'm excited to see him. I'm excited. I trust all the casting decisions they've done. And he's playing one of my favorite characters with one of my most favoritest monologues in all of the Song of Ice and Fire. So no pressure, Peter. No pressure at all.
Is that the Red Grass Field one?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's going to be his, you know, his Emmy nom for a guest appearance or whatever bid right there. That monologue. It is a really, you know, when you think of the Sworn Sword, that is one of the things that you think of is the Eustace Osgray monologue, which we don't need to spoil, but suffice to say, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
And I know they wouldn't cast anyone who couldn't do a phenomenal job at that monologue. So I am set and ready to see it.
Yeah, totally. So Eustace, for people watching, listening, who maybe aren't quite as familiar, Eustace is the Lord. He's not a Lord. He's a landed knight. Yeah. So Sir Eustace Osgray, who has a holdfast named Standfast, and Dunk has sworn his sword to him. So Dunk is helping him out with stuff. You know, think of it like a minor contract for Dunk. He gave his word. He'd help Eustace Osgray with some stuff. And Eustace Osgray is a very proud, prideful dude, very reminiscent. So think like an older lord near the end of his life, looking back on the things he enjoyed and the things he's bitter about from his legacy and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, this actor, he's going to do a great job. But yeah, those are our castings. You have any more thoughts on the casting stuff?
I just can't wait to see more of the castings. I know certain characters, really the only other big character I think we're all waiting to see get casted is Sir Lucas Inchfield, or the Long Inch. Awesome nickname. Need more of those. That's probably the last one of the main characters. Because they're not a lot. There's not like the Hedge Knight, there weren't a lot of main characters. Mostly everybody's a side character.
Totally. I think, you know, the Long Inch is the other main one. So like they've essentially said, like, You know, you've got Peter Claffey and Dexter Solansel coming back. And then it's these three. Like in the press release for it, they were like, that's the cast for season two. So Lucas Inchfield is the other one. We know, you know, he's the Castellan of Coldmoat, which is Lady Rohan's castle. Her, I think you, we were talking about this before the show, her brother-in-law, right?
Yes, her brother-in-law is a, not a maester, but a Faith of the Seven, what's his role?
Septon.
Septon, brother-in-law to Septon.
Yeah, yeah.
And she has a sister-in-law who is, you know, not all there in the head, who's also in the show. Has yeah,
so there are a couple of minor characters and Lucas Inchfield still to go. So expect at least one more good, solid casting announcement probably in the coming weeks. Because the other thing we know that we can talk about. So they are filming this. They have talked about how this season. When I say they, I mean Ira Parker, who's been doing some interviews. This season is a little more complicated, a little more expensive. They have the same budget as season one. They expected it to be cheaper almost than season one because it's a slightly more compact story. They don't have a big fancy joust or anything like that. But then, you know, inflation happens and they also can't film because it takes place during a drought. The outdoor scenes, they can't film in Belfast. So we do know now, we've gotten confirmed that they're filming those in Spain. And I saw a leaked video where I recording this on a Thursday. I saw it just today, of sets going up in Spain. And the local news there is reporting that they'll be filming in that location until May. So probably early summer, we could see this thing wrap. But yeah, that should be pretty exciting. What else?
Because I mean, lucky for them, they it's only, you know, it's not a lot of locations they need for the story. So I understand. Hey, we got to film this outside. It's a drought. Where can we find some dry terrain to make this all make sense?
Yeah, totally. Not Northern Ireland.
No,
it's too beautiful there. Yeah,
why is it so lush everywhere?
Yeah, right. And Ira Parker did say they found one dry riverbed in Spain that they were like, we're going to go shoot there. And then the week before it got its first like flood in like 10 years, he said. So they had to find a different one to shoot in. So they have, you know, they're moving through all this stuff. They are overcoming obstacles just like Sir Duncan the Tall. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that is going. A couple of other fun little tidbits. Sam Spruill, who played Maekar Targaryen, confirmed he is not in this season.
I don't believe him.
Oh, you don't? You think we'll see him?
You know what? Do I think we'll see him? Probably not. Do I want to see him? Yes. Even if it's just for like one scene to know what's going on over there while he's brooding over in Summerhall. Maybe we can... Because you can film that real quick. It's not like he has to be on set for a month at a time. If it's like, hey, we just need you for one scene, like call him up, put that beard back on, we got it.
He gets the raven from Egg saying where he is, and he just sighs and curses and crumples up the letter. And then that's it. That's all we see of Maekar this season. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah. So maybe they can do something like that for him. I would love it.
Yeah, I would too. He was really so good in that, especially the finale. That I definitely want to see more of him. Another actor who has said he couldn't comment on season two, but he knows that if the show goes for many seasons, George R. R. Martin told him he comes back eventually. That's Daniel Ings, Lionel Baratheon. He plays a part later in Egg's life when Egg is an adult and Dunk is on the King's Guard. Lionel comes back around, so that's like season eight or nine. Like
is that even eight? I feel like that's eight or season for that season. It has to be like 25 years in the future, and I don't know if they're gonna wait for Egg to grow that grow up that much. Wait for Dexter to grow up that much.
That's true. We're gonna be like Eustace Ospreay watching that. Like, man, I remember when this show was young. So yeah, don't expect to see either of them next season. So this is an interesting thing that hasn't really been reported on a lot, but Ira Parker kind of offhandedly said there was a brief period where they considered doing a season that took place between the Hedge Knight and the Sworn Sword. So it would have covered Duncan Egg's travels, because they travel for a year and a half before the start of the Sworn Sword. They go to Old Town. They visit Maester Aemon, who Parker has hinted we could still see Maester Aemon in the show briefly, probably. And they go to Dorne, and then they end up back in the Reach. But apparently, he said, even with George R. R. Martin's notes about what they did, it was too thin. They didn't have enough to really do a season of television. Do you think that was a good thing that they didn't go through with that?
I trust them. I trust their opinions. Do I wish it would have happened? Yes, only because that means we get more content. Now, I know they said it was thin. They didn't have a lot to go on. But I think they could have fleshed out an idea for maybe 5 episodes if they really wanted to stretch it. Even so, with the story they're telling now, I'm assuming we may see maybe episode 1 a little bit in Dorne to kind of know what they've been doing. Maybe a few flashbacks after that.
Yeah.
I think it would have been great to maybe make this season, make season 2 longer. Maybe instead of 6 episodes, if you had that little of material, maybe you do 8 or 9 episodes and 3 of them are that story. Because go on.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah, we get a little bit of a longer season. We do get this extra quest that maybe it couldn't fill 6 episodes, but we could get 2.5, maybe 3.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That would have been fun. I would have been for that. But as it stands, I am expecting we're going to see part of it, like either as a montage at the start of the season or similar to what season 1 did. Maybe that will be the primary thing it flashes back to, where, like, you know, because they reference their journey a lot. Like, they talk about what they did in Dorne and Old Town, or Dunk thinks about how Maester Aemon measured his height and stuff like that. So I could see them using that as flashback material and just, you know, comedic effect. Egg has a big floppy hat this season. He should. Hopefully they don't cut the floppy hat, because that is important stuff.
Yeah, maybe they curl up the front so we can see his face a little more, but you got to have the hat.
Yeah, it's true. Sorry, Moiraine from the Wheel of Time, but we've got a new floppy hat person coming. But yeah, so lots of stuff to look forward to in season 2. One other small thing, an actor was reportedly injured on set during one of the action scenes with Peter Claffey, had to be taken to the hospital. They are all right, thankfully. I think it was a stunt person, but it kind of hints that they may have already started filming some of the climactic stuff for the season, because Dunk doesn't have a whole lot of fights in the Sworn Sword.
Maybe he has a little bit, and you know, they probably get this out the way quick. Maybe a match or two. So I feel sorry for the person who got hurt. Yeah. I guess they forgot Peter Claffey played that rugby back in the day, and I guess he might have came out on set.
I guess so. Dunk the Lunk. He is thick as a castle wall. But yeah, so A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms 2. We've talked about it quite a bit. Anything else you're looking forward to, you want to mention before we move on to the other big Game of Thrones news we got to talk about?
Anything else I want to mention? You know what? I just can't wait to hear more casting news and finally get maybe some more official images from set. Just a few sneak peeks. Just a few sneak peeks so we can get those clear images.
Right? I feel like HBO doesn't do a whole lot of that. Like the set picks, people on set. They did it for House of the Dragon. Like, there's a picture or two of, like, Ryan Condal, the showrunner, like, on set for House of the Dragon. But, like, give us a bit more. Netflix does the behind-the-scenes images. Not that I want you to be like Netflix, because HBO is way better with their how frequent they are with images. But, yeah, come on, HBO. Help us out.
Don't hold out. Are you excited about anything else from season 2 or that you can't wait to see?
I'm excited to hear more castings. I mean, I am stoked for, I think, the all the stuff with Dunk and Rohan. You know, there is kind of there's a simmering romantic tension there. And I think it's a memorable part of the book. I think it will be a really memorable part of the show. She is probably the best female character in any of the Duncan Egg novellas that have been published so far by quite a bit. So yeah, I cannot wait to see her and Peter Claffey together and what their chemistry is like and all that sort of stuff and what sort of jokes Egg makes at Dunk's expense. So yeah, it, probably that for me. And then also the duel that we won't talk the deets about, but I'm excited to see anything related to that too.
Yeah, now that we know that Peter Claffey's taking it very seriously, yes. I'm excited.
Yeah, I also so he's growing his hair out for this season, so yeah. We'll have long hair Dunk, because Dunk in the books has long hair. Peter Claffey is taking the assignment seriously.
Hey, I love it. I remember seeing him before, like doing the press junkets. I'm like, oh, he's growing his hair out. And yeah. Aren't they about to start filming season two? I'm like, I'm ready for it. I was ready for it.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, Knight of the Seven Kingdoms season two. Keep an eye on winteriscoming.net where we will, you know, we keep up with the production. So when it wraps, when we find out more stuff about it, we'll post there. Because yeah, it's filming right now. It started in December of last year. So they're like 3 months in. They're pretty deep into production at this point and are going for reportedly at least another couple months. So yeah, expect news probably around the time House of the Dragon drops in June. I expect we'll know more.
Yeah, 100%.
Which is also right around the time that season one of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms comes out on DVD and Blu-ray for the physical media peeps.
Yeah. I'll make sure to buy it because I can't risk anybody changing anything. Like, let me get my physical media now.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. But the other big thing we need to talk about that's made news in the past week. So this report came out from Page Six Hollywood that apparently Warner Brothers Discovery's film division has a finished script. Draft of a script, an initial script for a Game of Thrones movie, which, quote, may be about Aegon the Conqueror. So Aegon the Conqueror, obviously, people watching this, you probably know this. He was the first Targaryen king of Westeros, united the Seven Kingdoms by conquering them.
it's in the title. Let me make it easy.
Yeah, with his sister wives, Visenya and Rhaenys. So this script was apparently written by House of Cards creator and Andor writer Bo Willimon. He did the No Way Out episode of Andor and also created House of Cards. And apparently, the Hollywood Reporter has confirmed this from their own independent sources. So this is a legit thing. There is a Game of Thrones movie script. It is about Aegon the Conqueror, and they say that Warner Bros. Is developing it as a, quote, mammoth Dune-sized feature film. However, at the same time, HBO is developing a television series with the writer from The Batman 2, Mattson Tomlin, which is also about Aegon the Conqueror. So they have two rival versions of this thing in development. Mark, this is a lot. What do you make of all this?
It sounds like they're going to have to make a big decision, because the most interesting part of Aegon the Conqueror is the, in my opinion, the conquering bit of the whole story. Yes. I can only assume that we all would assume that Mattson Tomlin, he was originally put on to write the script for the television show. He's been doing that for at least, I think it was announced, about 2 years ago? A
couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah, so that has to be far in development. And to hear that they're also doing a movie, and I'm like, so would it be about Aegon doing the conquering? Would it be about another part of his life? If so, at this point, which one would they go with? I know which one I would prefer them to do, in my opinion.
Which is?
The movies.
The movie, yeah.
Yeah, I think the story just lends itself, and I can go into a long detail of when and where each movie and film should take place, where it should stop, what stories they should include and not include. But before I bore you with 20 minutes of that, I just think the movies are the best thing for this story in the expanding battles and the, you know, kind of time jumps they would need to do to fast travel people across Westeros so we can kind of get to the point of the story.
Yeah.
because there is a lot of leeway they have when writing something like this, because Fire and Blood's written like a history book. We get the bits and we get a little bit of dialogue, but there's a lot of connecting the dots, and I feel like that the story just lends itself for a movie, so we don't have to go too far off the rails.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think we have any other examples we could possibly draw from of the opposite where it happens, of something adapting Fire and Blood and needing to fill in a little too much. No, definitely no other examples. But that's really fair though. Like, so our colleague Natalie wrote about this past week of like, which would it be better as, like, movie, show? And she kind of made the point that like you said, the best part of Egg on the Conqueror story is the conquering. So like, if you don't have the budget to do the battles, like, there's no real point in doing it. Like, it's different than something like even the Dance of the Dragons, where there's a lot of family drama and pathos, and like, that is just as big a part of everything as the battles and the dragons. Yes. Like, yes, Aegon has some family drama, but like, most of the drama happens after he's gone. Like, most of it is Aegon's gone and now everyone's at each other's throats. So I think, you know, if you can't do things like the melting of Harrenhal, the death of Black Harren with a good budget, or the Field of Fire where like tens of thousands of people died, like,
even the Last Storm, when they killed the Last Storm King.
Yeah, totally. So there are a lot of those huge things, and they're almost all battles. Like, there's not a ton of, you know, small room politicking, backstabbing type stuff in this, or at least not the same amount you would expect from something like House of the Dragon or Game of Thrones. I think the more I think on it, the more I think a movie would be good. But I am curious, like, the developing two versions of it is kind of insane to me, because it's like, the Hollywood Reporter reported on that a while ago, that there were potentially two versions in development, I think around the end of last year. So it's like, were they not confident? Were they trying to make HBO and Warner Brothers compete to see which one is better? Or do these tie in somehow? Like, are we going to get a Aegon the Conqueror movie where he conquers everything, and then a show that shows like him ruling for a little while? I don't know. I don't know if that's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't like those cinematic universes trying to have these movies and then kind of have these TV shows kind of tie into it. Another superhero universe tried to do that, and so, sometimes it works, and sometimes it really that connection doesn't happen. So, movies great. If they did want to do a TV show, in my mind, first of all, I think Aegon is kind of boring, at least from what we get from the books. The more interesting part of the story would be the other rulers and how they react to the dragon people coming and trying to take their kingdom. But that lends itself to a TV show more than it would this epic movie.
Yeah, but then that, you know, again, Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, they've all had to kind of tiptoe around where their battles are, you know, and save their budgets and do them like that. And Aegon the Conqueror, you just can't do that with the same way, because you need those big battles. Like, the whole thing is, he comes to Westeros, there are all these big events, and that's how the Iron Throne's made, and that's how the Seven Kingdoms are united. And I think to do it from, like, you know, the Lord's perspective, like, I'm just imagining an Aegon the Conqueror show where, like, all the big events happen off screen and it's just everybody reacting to them in rooms, and like, that would just be not great. Like,
they're just pointing, going, "Oh my goodness, look at that."
A dragon. And it's just a person point. Like, they'd save the dragon budget. House of the Dragon got it all. So yeah, I think if they're gonna do this, doing it, you know, as a movie with a good budget, like Dune, that kind of sounds like it could be the way. Because you're right, like, Aegon is not that juicy for a television show in terms of like the drama of the guy. Like, it's, you know, make a Maegor the Cruel television show or something. Like, there are just better Targaryens you could do that about than Aegon, really. So yeah, that's what's going on with that. We will have our ear to the ground. The kind of the one flip side to this is that that same Page Six report says the movie is like kind of in limbo right now. So they have the script for it, but because Warner Brothers Discovery is potentially being acquired by Paramount Skydance, everything is in limbo because nobody at Warner Brothers knows, you know, if the new management's going to want to do a whole new slate of stuff when they come in, how much is going to get carried over, all that kind of stuff. These hostile corporate takeovers. I mean, if you've seen Succession, you obviously know what this is like. Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, we don't know if these movies, if this is still going to happen.
Yeah, but what about the art? No.
Right? You would think that matters.
Maybe, maybe a little less. We'll see. We'll get something in the future. What will it be? It'll definitely have to wait for the dust to settle on the merger.
And yeah.
We'll see where the merger mergerizes us, and we can finally get us back in Westeros.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't really get something concrete, whether that's a release date or you know, anything like the thing firing on all cylinders until after House of the Dragon is done, because House of the Dragon only has one more season after this, potentially like four seasons. It'll be over by 2028. And then at that point, there will be room in the Game of Thrones universe for more stuff, because Night of the Seven, that'll be an interesting time. House of the Dragon will be over. A Night of the Seven Kingdoms will be caught up to the novellas unless George writes more. And then we'll see. Maybe it'll be Aegon's time.
Yeah, Aegon's time, or George will surprise us with secret releases is right? What I dream.
Yeah, with all the stuff happening this year, it's like maybe this is the year for the Winds of Winter. I'll be a little Delulu. I don't mind. I've been waiting however many years, a lot of years at this point. Gotta keep the hope alive.
Yeah, I didn't read the books till 2018, so haven't had to wait as long as some.
Lucky. Yeah, I read them the year Feast for Crows came out, so 2005. So it's been a minute. But yeah, so lots of exciting stuff in Westeros. Mark, any closing thoughts? Anything else you want to talk about as we start winding down?
I just want to say I'm very excited to see where the stories go in Westeros in terms of potential films, all the potential television shows they've mentioned. There's a new excitement about, hey, we gotta return to Westeros, or we gotta return to Planetos. The people want it, and the people do want it. And hopefully, whatever happens with this merger, that momentum continues, and they really believe, like, hey, let's just give the people what they want. At least a little bit.
Yeah. You know, before all this stuff, before the movie was announced, before the castings were announced, what I had originally had on our outline for this show was this question that I'll pose to you right now, because you almost kind of brought it up, which is, do you think A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms has really revitalized this franchise? There's a lot of weird feelings after House of the Dragon season two, but it seems like people are pretty keen on it again.
Yeah, I really feel like that was the lightning strike the fandom needed, especially the television version of the fandom, to be like, hey, I'm excited. I want to see what other stories are in Westeros, because I truly feel like after season two of Hot D, House of the Dragon, you know, they had all these shows they had announced, but I don't feel like anyone were truly excited about them anymore. It's like, not if like for what they gave us on the screen, like I don't want more of that. But now we have a new version, and I think it opens up everybody's minds to, okay, it doesn't have to be one way. These new shows, it can be different ways, it can be different tones, it can be different people telling the story in this world, and I think we're all excited.
Yeah, totally. I think that the tonal shift of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms really, you know, shows that there can be different types of Westeros shows, and people will respond to that. I think House of the Dragon, and like there's plenty I do enjoy about House of the Dragon, so I know that I have joked about not shading it and whatever, but like I do think one thing it struggled with as the first Game of Thrones prequel was being almost a little afraid to stray too far from what Game of Thrones felt like in some ways. And I think A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms had to just totally toss that playbook aside, because it's just not that type of story. And fortunately, it has very strong source material to go off of. So yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that the fans, you know, it seems like everyone is real psyched again because of this show. And if HBO takes notes from this, that, you know, they can have different series and can have different projects and like, don't be afraid to take chances on different stuff. I don't know. Maybe we could be enjoying these for a while longer.
Yeah, we yearn for the people of Westeros. Please, HBO, give them to us. Please.
Yes. Are there no true spinoffs among you? But yeah, we should probably wind down. We've been talking for a minute. So this has been, as always, Take the Black. I am Daniel Roman. He's Mark Nettles. And we do this talk show every week when I'm not sick, which is going to be from now on. So we'll be talking all things Westeros, as well as other fantasy and science fiction stuff. Now that A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is over, and we got a few months to cool down before House of the Dragon. So tune in, like, subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. And until next time, we'll be thinking all about the Sworn Sword. So we'll see you guys soon.
Dude, my knee is absolutely cooked. I feel like I'm 70.
You tapping out already?
Yeah, man, my knee's telling me to retire.
Bro, you're never going to feel young again if you're still rocking those crusty knee sleeves from 2005.
What?
IncrediWear, dude. The IncrediWear knee sleeve.
What the hell is that?
This is what the pros use. Four of the last five NBA MVPs wore IncrediWear. It's not squeeze your knee until it's numb compression. It actually increases blood flow and speeds recovery. Less pain, better healing. And the best part? Wear it all day and walk like you're not 80.
Wait, so it's not just cutting off my circulation and hoping for the best?
Nope, it actually works. So you coming back in? Or are you going to sit there and feel old?
All right, let's go.
Stop letting your knees bench you. Go to freesocks.com, grab the IncrediWear knee sleeve, and get a free pair of IncrediWear socks. FreeSox.com and get a free pair of socks with your knee sleeve purchase. Get back in the game.